Today's episode is brought to you by the Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. Find out more at canbyfoursquare.com or on Sunday mornings at 9 and 11 a.m.
This episode is also brought to you by Odd Mo's Pizza in Canby. Handmade, awesome pizza, as well as craft beer and cider, delivered. Call them today at 503-266-8444.
This tax exemption eludes me like a gazelle eludes an arthritic cat.
Why can't Canby people keep track of their dogs? Like, what is...
To do that, you can't be stupid with guns.
Yeah. Set the board is saying they want to make Canby schools great again.
It feels like we've been doing this interview for years.
Inside of me was screaming.
You run for school board, you win or you die.
There's no second place. Welcome to the Canby Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Franke.
I'm Joyce Sturby.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
The Aurora Airport Improvement Association has rolled out a new long-term initiative that they say is intended to highlight the impact and significance the airport has in the local area. The initiative, Friends of Aurora Airport, will highlight the people and businesses that have collectively contributed to the airport's safety, preparedness, and success since 1943. The campaign includes a website and social media aimed at promoting a positive and educational view of the airport, its history, its purposes, and its impact on local businesses, government, and communities. The Aurora State Airport is home to dozens of local businesses that do important work that is mission critical to our surrounding communities, said Bruce Bennett, president of Aurora Aviation. The airport has so many people, pilots, mechanics, medical professionals, maintenance technicians, administrative staff, and others, that drive the success of our communities every day. Originally established as an auxiliary base to support the U.S. war effort during World War II, the Aurora State Airport has grown into the third busiest airport in Oregon. It's also a major contributor to the local and state economy. It sustains nearly 1,300 living wage jobs at the airport, according to the press release announcing the new initiative. This campaign allows us to give appreciation to all of the people that contribute to the safe operations that our communities rely on, said Tony Hebling, logistics manager for Wilson Construction. We are thrilled to tell the story of the airport and all the important work that it does on a daily basis to support our communities, friends, and neighbors. The website also contains information about the airport's proposed runway extension, which would increase from 5,000 feet to 6,000 feet. Friends of the Aurora Airport seem to be in favor of the extension, saying it is both needed and overdue. It would also mean safer operations for airport users and area residents. However, the extension is opposed by the cities of Wilsonville and Aurora, land use advocacy groups, and many local residents who fear the proposal would bring larger, louder aircraft and more of them. These groups have also been increasingly critical of the process proponents have used to this point. The bulk of the matter currently resides with the Oregon State Land Use Board of Appeals, commonly called LUBA. A number of appeals have been filed against the Oregon Department of Aviation's October 31st decision. This essentially cleared the way for the runway extension, which is in the airport's master plan. However, opponents say the master plan was never actually approved or adopted back in 2012, as it should have been. A LUBA decision could come any day now, or it could take months. No one was injured in a one-alarm fire that broke out on Southwest Berg Parkway in Canby Friday. The blaze originated at OBC Northwest, a manufacturer and distributor of nursery, greenhouse, and horticultural supplies. The fire was active and staff had already evacuated when Canby fire crews arrived on the scene, Division Chief Matt English said. The building's sprinkler system kicked on and helped control the fire's spread until the CFD extinguished it. Canby police assisted in closing Berg Parkway for a short time to give CFD access to a nearby fire hydrant. We received mutual aid from Aurora, Tualatin Fire and Rescue, and Clackamas Fire District 1, English said. The Canby Fire Rehab Group also responded to take care of the firefighters on scene. The cause of the fire is still under investigation. Start the presses! Kitty Hawk Products, a company based in Southern California, has opened its first Pacific Northwest facility right here in Canby and is now providing its unique services. Kitty Hawk is a pioneer and leader in hot isostatic pressing, or HIP. This is a process in which metals, ceramics, or carbides are simultaneously subjected to extremely high heat and pressure, which the company says results in startling improvements to the material's mechanical properties. Kitty Hawk says the process is also used for diffusion bonding similar and dissimilar materials and for applying wear or corrosion-resistant coatings to parts exposed to stringent operating conditions. I'm going to be honest here. We don't know what any of that means, but it sounds awesome. Kitty Hawk has 6,4600 HIP units at their headquarters in Garden Grove, a suburb near Los Angeles. Each one is capable of producing pressures of up to 1,500 PSI and temperatures of up to 2,300 degrees Fahrenheit. They have over 50 employees and serve companies from the aerospace, commercial, military, automotive, firearms, medical, oil, and gas industries, including Honeywell, UTI Aerospace Systems, GE, Pratt & Whitney, and Rolls-Royce. The company says they expanded to Canby because of the increased demand for HIP services in the Pacific Northwest. They hope the new location will facilitate continued growth for their existing clients and attract new customers from the region. Their multi-million dollar investment in the Canby Pioneer Industrial Park includes the purchase of a 27,000 square foot facility on South Redwood Street next to Canby Utility and a new state-of-the-art HIP unit. The company says they hope to hire local talent to join the Canby team and install a second 4,600 square foot unit early next year. Speaking of kitties, move over, Baby Yoda. There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, at least in this corner of the galaxy. And its name is Scootaloo. While responding to an unrelated call on Eves Road last week, south of Malala, Clackamas County Sheriff's Deputy Brian Lister came across the most heartbreaking of crises, a four-month-old kitten stuck in a tree. Thinking quickly, the deputy immediately called in the experts in such matters, firefighters. Apparently, Mr. Incredible was otherwise engaged. It wasn't until Malala Fire District arrived on the scene that Deputy Lister told them they'd been called to rescue an actual cat stuck in a tree. Despite their expertise, things started primitively and unsuccessfully. But there's more than one way to skin a cat, or so they say. And they soon had liberated Scootaloo from its woody prison, safe and sound. The owners could not be immediately located, so the kitten stayed in Deputy Lister's custody, getting fed and even joining him in a ride-along. Eventually, the kitten was reunited with its family. It had been missing for 2 days. In a weird coincidence, one of the family members is also a sheriff's office employee. We're grateful to the CCSO and Malala Fire for their service in this case. I guess when they say, no call too small, they really mean it. But if one of the people involved is not, right now, working on a spec script for a buddy cop movie named Lister and Scootaloo, someone has seriously dropped the ball. For photos, find this story on our website, canbenowpod.com. A lot going on in sports this week. We'll kick things off with an impressive showing by the Canby Cougar women's basketball team, who have reeled off two impressive wins after losing their season opener on the road to Forest Grove. The most surprising of the two wins was the Cougs' upset of the then number 3 ranked Mountainside on Tuesday. The Mavericks were led by 6'4 Cameron Brink, the third best recruiting prospect in the county for high school women's hoops. But Brink got into some foul trouble early on that sent her to the bench, and Camby took advantage, erasing a 15-point deficit and taking control for the remainder of the game in front of a raucous crowd, led by senior Nicole Mickelson, 14 points, junior Zoe Thompson, 13, and freshman Allie Mead, adding 12. The Cougs won with a 51-44 victory. The Cougs were back in action on Friday at Canby High School as the Saxons from South Salem came to town. Canby trailed after the first quarter but dominated the final three frames to secure a second straight W, 49-45. Odell came up big again in only the third game of her high school career, leading the team with 14 points. Mickelson added 12. Canby hosts Newburgh on Wednesday and Grants Pass on Friday as non-league play continues. Tip-off is at 7 p.m. The men's team has had opposite starts to their season. They kicked things off with a win over Park Rose, then dropped the next two, a narrow 59-61 loss at Grants Pass, followed by a 22-point rout at the hands of West Salem. They'll have a couple weeks before the Century Tournament at Hillsboro High School, which starts the day after Christmas. Canby Wrestling had an impressive start to their season last week, dominating from start to finish to take their first league match from Tigard 44-24. Wrestlers winning their respective weight classes included Landon Sprague, Ethan Ensrud, Nick Marquez, Dom Netter, Tyler Hensley, Caden Boyd, and Matthew Hagen. The swim team split their first meet against Lake Oswego Thursday as the women, led by Marin Shard and Kylie Hester, delivered a dominant victory, 111-59, while the Lake O men returned the favor, beating Canby 116-53.
Hey, Tyler.
Yeah?
Can you do me a favor? Just real quick, name all the services that you're subscribed to.
Okay. Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu. There's like Google stuff, I think. My wife, I think, does a cat thing, and I'm looking into Dollar Shave Club.
It's starting to get a little ridiculous, right? There's even an app to manage all of your subscriptions now. Of course, it comes with its own monthly convenience fee. It can get a little overwhelming. They've even coined a term for it, subscription fatigue.
If you're being hit with subscription fatigue blues, we have a solution for you, at least when it comes to streaming options. Try Easy Video TV from Direct Link. It offers your favorite shows and movies all in one app on the same bill as your internet service.
Direct Link is a local community-based provider that has your back. Record your favorite shows, watch them anywhere, and access all the major local and cable TV networks with an Easy Video subscription.
Why are we still sitting here? How do I sign up? Let's go!
Well, it's easy. Just call DirectLink at 503-266-8111, visit their office at Juniper and 2nd, or go to directlink.coop to switch to Easy Video TV today. Hey Tyler, did you know that the world has changed in the past 20 years?
No way!
Yep, it's true. The way people shop for goods and services has completely changed since this thing called the internet started catching on.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And yet some realtors still offer the same old services in the same old ways and for the same old percentages. Victory Point Property Group in Canby believes it's time the real estate business caught up with the times. They'll meet with you for free, explain every step of the process, give you a clear game plan, and even let you choose the listing commission.
Really? They let you choose their commission?
Really? Victory Point Property Group understands this is one of the biggest and most exciting decisions of your life, and they'll do everything they can to make sure you handle it like a rock star.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm going to check them out by calling 503-263-4700 or by visiting online at victorypointhomes.com.
You do that. Victory Point Property Group, real estate reimagined. On the Cambie Conversation today, I am standing in one of the oldest existing buildings in Clackamas County with the new owners of the building, Daryl and Amy Lenhart. Hey, guys.
Hi there.
Hi.
Why don't you take a minute and tell folks where we are and kind of what's happening here?
Well, we're standing inside of what many people would remember is the Whiskey Hill store. And this building was originally built in the mid-20s. As the Whiskey Hill Schoolhouse.
Yeah, not too many folks would remember it still as that, right? Might be still some folks with us.
My father
is
one of them. It's been a lot of fun bringing him here because he did second grade through eighth grade in this building.
Yeah. So it was built in 1926 as a one-room schoolhouse, is that right?
It's actually a two-room schoolhouse.
Oh, okay.
And it contained two districts. So you saw on the sign it had two district numbers on it. And there was a Yoder that was a teacher here forever that eventually became the principal of 91 school later and then eventually retired. But he taught all eight grades in this building. And so my dad remembers that fondly. We've met with one other of my dad's classmates, and there's two others that are alive from that era. They're all 88 years old now.
Yeah. So your dad, what's his name?
Floyd Lenhart.
Floyd, you said that you brought him back here, and it's fun. Does he have any sort of fun memories he's told you about? Or like, that's where I got caught with the spitballs? Or
Well, he loved to come in and describe, you know, there's been some changes in here, but he was describing what the building was and how the blackboards were laid out and where the stove was in the building and where his desk was. And
Yeah,
he's given us a lot of memories about what life was like then.
That's got to be cool to have a connection to this place that goes back that far, now to be in an opportunity where he can hopefully either kind of restore it to some of its glory and really bring it into a new place that it hasn't ever been before.
Yeah, and that's been, you know, that's one of the big dreams, being this is, you know, I'm third generation out here at Whiskey Hill, and so growing up out here and always coming to this building when it was a store, and you know, Amy can talk about that as well, but we just keep running into people that say there's so many fond memories of this building.
Yeah.
And we'd love to be able to bring some of the, you know, nostalgia back for people.
Sure. So Amy, tell me a little bit about your history with this place. Are you just here because Daryl made you?
No, I grew up a mile that way. He grew up about a mile north.
Yeah.
And I learned how to count right here on the floor with my grandmother because they had actual penny candy.
Uh-huh.
And one of my earliest memories, I couldn't count yet.
Yeah.
I could, but I knew how to lay out my pennies and put a candy for each penny.
Okay.
And then she would make me try to count. So I had to have been about three or four.
Right. And there's something about putting math in terms of candy
that
really connects with children.
Definitely. So. I mean, I remember sitting on this dirty floor, these tiles, they're the same tiles, and that would have been like 1970. And so, you know, my family owned our farm out there until just 4.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're just back. We're really happy. We just got married. Four and a half years ago.
Okay.
So we reconnected.
Still pretty new. Yeah.
We went to kindergarten together at Zion Mennonite Kindergarten before they had kindergarten at the school.
Okay.
And so we met in the fall of 1971.
Wow. Well, congratulations, guys.
Yeah. We're fairly newlyweds still.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
seem like
dream.
You still like each other so far.
We do.
Yeah.
That's great. We get along pretty good. Yeah.
Daryl's being suspiciously quiet.
No, it's. I mean, it's been a blessing to be able to, you know, marry your childhood best friend.
Yeah, so absolutely.
We like Amy said, we grew up so close together here, played together all the time, and we're just the closest of friends from kindergarten all the way till we graduated from Canby High School.
I'm starting to get suspicious that this was all ploys. You guys are just pitching a Hallmark movie. This is, I mean, come on, did I walk into it? Because I don't have any money to fund a movie. That's, I don't know what impression I gave you.
Yeah, it's pretty sappy, you know, to just kind of reconnect after, you know, a lot of years, and we both found ourselves single, and it's like, oh, this might work.
Yeah.
And it did. Yeah. And we had a dream of coming back here, and then we learned that the store was going to be available. Mm. And so we watched that process for 2 years from the East Coast where we were living. Mm-hmm. And we prayed a lot. Mm-hmm. And
so you were on the East Coast.
We were in Northern Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, we have family in the area, so they'd kind of tell us this is happening, you know, as far as just what's happening with the store. And then we were trying to find, you know, information from banks and realtors, and it was very hard to find.
So yeah, let's talk a little bit about the store and the history that brought us to this point. So as we mentioned, it used to be a school in a different place across the street where 91 School is now. Mm-hmm. It was moved here, we were talking like 48, 49.
Yep.
And then at some point, pretty near after that, it was turned into a store?
We think that it immediately became a store.
Okay.
We have pictures that show a sign that says Whiskey Hill Community Center, but it also said groceries on the windows.
Okay.
So I think it was dual purpose.
Yeah, and it had gas pumps
right
away. So,
and that's the thing with like small town stores. It'd be like, you know, grocery / dentist /
post office / hangout. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there was the property was owned by a Yoder. And so initially the original owner was a Yoder, and then it was sold to an Owings. Mm-hmm. It was a prominent family out here.
Right, yeah.
Then
we had Larry Owings on the podcast not too long ago. I think he'd be of that family.
Yeah.
It was one of his older cousins.
Okay.
I talked to Larry recently about that.
Yeah.
And then it was sold to a Carnegie.
Yep. And familiar with them.
So the Carnegies, yes, and yeah, they have another prominent family out here.
Yeah.
And then when we were kids, a family called last name Seymour's had it, and they actually bought, they were living in Portland.
Right.
He worked for like Fred Meyer and decided,
Tradewell.
I want to get out of the city and bought it and came out here. And
I should have brought my t-shirt.
Yeah.
I just found it the other day. Yeah. I have a t-shirt I probably wore when I'd have to look exactly the years they owned it, but it's probably about like a youth size 8.
Uh-huh.
And it says, I got mine at Whiskey Hill. And it's Seymour's Whiskey Hill store.
Yeah. So. Well, and you don't understand how podcasts work, Amy, but no one can see you.
No,
so
I know that, but I want to show you.
Well, you're wearing the shirt, as far as I know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so thank you
see
so much
shirt?
For wearing that.
It's very tight.
Seymour's, and then
Yeah, and I found a feature when he owned the store in the Oregonian that, you know, and it mentioned, just like you said, Daryl, how he wanted to get out of the rat race, and he had worked for Fred Meyer for like 8 years, and I think it was like the Fred Meyer, not even just the store, like
actual
the actual
Fred.
Man. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, Mr. Meyer. But, and you know, but once he's out here, he's like wearing plaid, he's got his like boots on the counter, like, yeah. Really just leaned into the lifestyle, so.
Yeah, yeah, and they were the last ones that really had it as a really country store with the gas station.
It started to kind of decline a little bit.
And it started to decline. Revenue was lost because of when they changed the laws about gas stations, and so all these rural gas stations got shut down, and so that was a revenue stream that you know, lost a lot of traffic. So later owners struggled with it, and eventually the owner after him went into bankruptcy with it in the early 2000s.
I understand. I think I'm in some of our emails or something, you might have mentioned, Amy, or maybe I understood this from someone else, but one of the difficult, I mean, this is a historic building. I don't know if it's nationally registered or whatnot, but that might have been some of the difficulty as far as there are certain things that you have to do with historic buildings if you're trying to fix them up or whatnot that can be a little more expensive sometimes than just...
Well, the owner after Seymour's is the... So the owner after the Seymours, Mike Johnson, he is actually the one who requested that it be put on the County Historic Register.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so of course we don't know, you know, what his intentions were or anything. Yeah, it was actually, I think it went on the registry in 92.
Oh, okay.
So I think it was a little bit of a process.
Okay.
And so then it was approved, but really nothing happened to improve the property or anything historically. He just wanted it on the registry, which is fine.
Yeah.
And then it changed hands again in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And then we just purchased it in October of 2019.
Yeah, and it's been a few years really since it was used for anything. I mean, it's kind of been not commercially used for a while. Is that right?
No, the last owners were doing business out of here. I know that they were, the last thing that we heard for sure is that they were, they had someone cooking Mexican food, authentic Mexican food, and one of their main revenue streams was to sell to people who worked in the fields around here. Yeah.
Cool.
So they had some different things going on. We don't really know.
Yeah.
But it wasn't what it had been maybe, you know, a few years ago.
Sure, Well, let's talk about the future then. What is your guys' vision for this place?
Well, we shared that at a community meeting a few weeks back, right across the street here at the cafeteria at 91. And,
cool.
And the big thing was, one, is to really want to restore the building to bring back as many of the architectural features as we can and make it look like a schoolhouse again.
Cool.
You know, what's been hidden over here on this north wall are all the original schoolhouse windows from the 20s.
Mm.
And they just, somewhere in the 70s, they got buried behind paneling and some modernizations.
Oh, yeah, this like very 70s era living room paneling that's on the walls.
Yes.
Yeah. That covered up the original tongue and groove,
which are still there.
Beadboard that's still there.
Amazing.
We have the original beadboard here.
There's many
we're
features
really excited.
That we're
so
going
cool.
to be able to bring back, and you come back on the road and you go, you know, wow, it really has a historic look to it.
Yeah.
And feel. Another big aspect is open it up for a place for coffee and some food.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of requests from the school community here, the local community, the airport community, someplace you can come and get a fresh cup of coffee, you know, a sandwich, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let Amy talk about some of the more creative aspects that we want to do here.
Okay,
so.
Cool.
So I revitalize vintage and antique furniture. And I started that business when we were in Virginia. And so we've talked about, you know, having a shop for that over the years, and this is going to have that.
Yeah.
So I will be doing that myself, but also offering at some point classes to teach people to do their own.
Cool.
I've done a lot of custom work for people, and I like to stylize and to market, and so we're excited about that.
Yeah.
And we'll integrate that all into a new residence that we're going to build as well.
Oh,
and
cool.
We're going to live here.
Yeah.
That's one of the questions we get a lot.
Right.
Is there is a residence tacked onto the back. It's not in good shape. Mm. So it is going to be totally rebuilt.
Okay. So you're going to live in the residence, not under the counter there.
No.
Okay.
No. Or the lean-to over there.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
We're
our goal inside of here is... Because, you know, you can look up right now. I know we're on a podcast, people can't see. But you walk in, it's about 9-foot ceilings.
I'll tell them if you're lying or not.
There's, up above is the original beadboard ceilings that are 13 feet high.
Okay.
So we're going to open all this back up and make it look like the 1920s schoolroom again. Complete with blackboards and old schoolroom desks.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
The whole thing. And we wanted it to be an area that people can come and congregate, hang out. We also intend to have some lodging here. So it'll be a store and an inn.
Cool.
And we're going to have, I wouldn't say a bed and breakfast, but definitely a place people can come and have at least 2-3 rooms that can be, you know, rented out and a place to stay out here at Whiskey Hill.
I love love it.
Another aspect of this is we really want to gather the history of the Whiskey Hill area.
Yeah.
You know, when you talk to people, even in Canby or Woodburn, they don't even know where Whiskey Hill is. I was just talking to someone, well, a contractor putting flooring in our house in Gladstone today. He's like, well, I kind of know where it is. I said, well, you know where the Tulip Festival is? Yeah. We're 4 miles from the Tulip Festival.
I mean, you don't have to go too far from where we're standing right now to be in Canby addresses.
No.
You know, because the Canby postal area goes pretty far,
right.
You know, pretty close to here.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we really want to gather the history. We already have some people who have given us things, their old school photographs.
Yeah.
So we're excited about that, to be able to gather that. And, you know, I told someone else when, you know, when we started this process, even when we come here, I still don't feel like, oh, we own this. This is ours. I feel more like we're the stewards of this property and the caretakers. And so when we gather all of that, it's not, we don't want to, we don't feel like, oh, this is ours. These are our photographs. These are our pieces of memorabilia. It's more, these are the memorabilia from this building, and we'd like them to stay here for as long as we own it, and then even further, who knows what will happen in the future, so that they're just here.
I mean, I was going to ask you, but you just basically nailed it. Like, because I've been doing a little research as well. I've sent you some stuff because the history of the area is an interest of mine as well, even though I didn't grow up here. But one thing that you see very clearly is the Whiskey Hill community that isn't even an incorporated community, but has a really strong identity that goes back a long ways as well. And, you know, like when they named it the 90, like it used to be Whiskey Hill School. And then like in the 40s, they're like, maybe we shouldn't have a school that's, you know, has whiskey in the name. It ended up being 91 School.
Right.
But even today, like in 91's part of Canby School District, but the 91 part of the Canby School District does sort of have its own identity. You know, fairly strongly. So that's one aspect of the story that really fascinated me, was your guys' desire to keep this because of its importance and history to the community, and kind of helping to preserve some of that identity that's so important to the folks who live out here.
I totally agree, because obviously, like I said, I'm third generation here. My dad grew up on a dairy farm just a quarter mile down the road, and then there's the Linhart Air Park, which is, you know, something my uncle started, buying a piece of property from my grandfather and getting that going in the 50s. And then growing up, you know, I mentioned some of those names, you know, we could talk about Ginriches and Garbers and other these rich family names that were big Mennonite families out here. My family, we weren't Mennonite, but we were very connected with those families, and my siblings, we were very involved with the Mennonite church. And so you're right. It's just, there's people out here, just a lot of pride for this area. A lot of appreciation for, you know, the values that we established growing up out here, and really like to maintain that identity.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the response on our Facebook page and in our Facebook group has been just overwhelming. In the first week, we had 5,000 different contacts, interactions, and people just so excited. And we started with that community meeting at 91 that Daryl was talking about. We just put a little sign up here. So just this little community would know about it. We didn't advertise it outside of just literally on Whiskey Hill. And we didn't know who would show up. Skylar wrote off the principal of 91, has been really supportive, and he helped us get that all set up. And we had 50 people show up that night.
Amazing.
And they were so excited, clapping for us. People who, every time we're out here, people stop. People hug us. People have kissed us. People are jumping up and down and clapping. They are so excited. They drive by and they honk and they wave and thumbs up, and it's really cool. So we're excited.
That's awesome. That's very heartwarming. So you have an event coming up this week.
We do, Tuesday the 17th.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Daryl's going to be out of town. But
oh, come on, Daryl.
Yeah. I know, he has like a real job. And it's on the East Coast.
So easy. Yeah. Nice, easy commute.
Yeah. So I will be here with my cousin and my sister-in-law.
Okay.
And we're going to be selling T-shirts.
Okay.
So they are...
Love a T-shirt.
Yeah, Lenhart's Whiskey Hill Store Restoration Project T-shirts, and designed by my son. So it's all in the family.
Cool.
And we'll be here from 2:30 to
5:30-ish.
Okay. We have kind of a limited number of T-shirts to sell that day, but we can take orders.
Okay.
And we're just going to be handing out some free popcorn, and hope people come and say hi, and you know, if they want a T-shirt, they're going to be $15, so not like super expensive or anything.
Cool.
Just trying to get, you know, excitement and word out.
You got to brand yourself. It's very important. Okay, my last question, if anybody's going to know, it's got to be you guys. Where does the name Whiskey Hill come from? No one can seem to tell me. I've heard a lot of rumors, but I don't believe them.
Yeah, my dad talks about that. It's literally, like I said, the family farm was just a quarter mile down the road.
Yeah.
There is a hillside that drops down here as you head toward Hubbard, to the west, down toward the Pudding River bottom.
Uh-huh.
And down on that hillside, they said, was a still, because there used
moonshine. That's a story I've heard as well.
Yeah, because there used to be cattlemen that would bring cattle on their way up to Portland, and it was a prominent place for people to stop.
Okay. So it was part of the local agricultural, and it wasn't a prohibition era thing? I wasn't sure about that.
I think it was actually pre-prohibition.
Okay.
I think it goes back in probably the late 19th century and it's been around for a while.
Yeah.
Because, again, it was because they talk about why they were moving cattle, which would have been quite a while ago.
Where I'm from in the South, moonshine was always a prohibition thing. Like, you know, if you hear the word moonshine, that's what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case out here. Like, it's more of just a name for a type of drink. Yeah. So,
Yeah, and so that's how it got its nickname. And
there's people who say they've seen parts of the still.
Even my dad claims as a kid that he could still go down in the woods and see remnants of the still.
Fascinating. Yes. Cool. Well, that is a little bit of a mystery solved. And like I said, that is a story I've heard as well. Whiskey Hill Store on Facebook, check them out. And then this Tuesday from 2:30 to 5.
5:30.
Come buy a T-shirt if you can. Thank you guys so much for telling us about it. Thanks for all your work here. It's quite a bit of work ahead of you.
That's an understatement.
As we look at a gaping hole in the floor. Yeah.
That's a pretty large hole.
Yeah.
But I'm excited about the vision that you guys have. So,
thank you.
And with the community support behind you, anything can happen, right?
Yeah. We are really, really excited.
Yes, we are. Thank you.
Cool. Okay. So, and you'll be open next week, I think, is the thing, right? No, just
yeah. Come on. Yeah. We're all set up.
I'm here at Advantage Mortgage with Derek Hill. And Derek, you were telling me about something that just came down from Fannie Mae that people might be interested in.
Yeah, Fannie Mae just came out with a report that said that the average homeowner in the United States has approximately 70% equity in their home.
Oh, now, wow.
Right. I mean, that's obviously average throughout the whole country. But because values have come up so substantially in the last 10 years, there is a ton of equity available that people can utilize.
Cool. So if people are potentially like looking to buy or move into a new home, you're saying that equity means it might be something that you would look at remodeling instead of if the market's not looking favorable to you.
Right, 100%. Because the market in Portland is so tough to buy, you know, we have an average of like 2.5 months worth of inventory. So it's just super hard for people to find what they're looking for. It may be just easier for them to take out some equity and do the upgrades or do an addition or pay off some debt or lots of different things. And that's one of the things that we love to do with people is sit down with them and kind of go over a game plan, you know, just that's one of the biggest things is knowing what you can do, and we love taking the time to do that for people.
Awesome, awesome. And people can find you on your website or just give you a call?
Yeah, they can go to findtheadvantage.com or call 266-5800, obviously 503 area code. And we love to chit-chat, and we have, you know, 8 or 9 different loan officers here in the Canby office that would love to sit down with somebody and work with them.
Cool. Thanks, Derek.
So just remember, Derek Hill, NMLS number 50183, Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 177059, Equal Housing Opportunity.
Well, I'm here now at Filbert's Farmhouse Kitchen with the manager, Aaron Wolf. Hey, Aaron.
Hi, nice to see you again, Tyler.
Nice to see you again. Welcome back onto the show.
Thank you.
Because, crazily, your guys' 1-year anniversary is coming up.
I don't even know what to say. I looked at the calendar about 3 weeks ago maybe now, and I saw that date looming.
Yeah.
The 26th of December is our
open day
official.
Day after Christmas. Yeah.
Day after Christmas. And I was just blown away.
Yeah, it's flown by.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what it's been like.
It's been amazing. It really has. There's been a lot of hard work and some long days, but honestly, the guests, the community, the people that have come in, our regular guest base, the employees, they've just been, all of them have just really been fantastic. And it's been obviously a huge learning curve in our first year of business.
Yeah.
Learning the business trends, for one. Learning business trends within a specific season and how they affect us and all those things. And so it's really been awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think it should be said, obviously, the owners and you as well, you have a long history in the restaurant and hospitality industry. It's not like this is your first time serving food to people, but this area for sure is new, because more the Portland is more your base and your experience, and the owners as well.
Agreed. At least, not necessarily as rural as Aurora more.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's hard to get more rural.
Yeah, it is. It's difficult, but I would say
I know, maybe.
Yeah, perhaps. But I'll say that it's, every time you open a new restaurant, it doesn't matter. I mean, you could still be in downtown, but if you're close to something else, that drives business, that's what your business driver can be. And so it just,
everything has a context.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. So just being out here has been totally different, but amazing.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit, because I do know when this started taking shape and I was really excited about it, and your guys' food is amazing. Your atmosphere is amazing.
You.
I love it. But even I'm a little bit like, is something like this going to work? Aurora, in a small town. So, I mean, here we are a year later. You guys, every time I drive by, it seems like it's pretty busy, pretty bumping. So, what do you think has been some of the keys to that success so far?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Gosh, there's so many reasons. You know, it doesn't happen on accident, but yes, some of it is luck, of course. I think first and foremost, we kind of sit in the perfect center point of a food desert triangle, between Canby, Woodburn, and Wilsonville, where there's lots of good places to get small bites. You know, you get a great meal at a lot of little places.
And a lot of food is grown, crazily, but
not served. Right. Yeah. And so we sit in the middle of that little triangle.
Yeah.
And when you put those three communities together, along with the Molinos, the Donalds, the Malala's and all that, all those places, you have a pretty healthy center of activity for a population, and not a lot of places to go to eat that set themselves apart.
Yeah.
A lot of great places to go, but maybe just a little different if you want a burger or whatever. But, I really feel like we just have something to offer that a lot of places don't. So that's one factor. Another factor, too, is that we're pretty centrally located between Portland and Salem. We get a lot of people meeting. Hey, we're from Portland. We're from Salem. We heard about you. You're right off the freeway. They come down here. That's been an awesome, awesome thing. But, I think just the the design of the building, the food we're serving, just kind of hits in a spot that people have kind of heard about. And now we're getting people coming from places we weren't expecting to come visit us. You know, we're getting, I had a group from Albany that was coming in once a month.
Yeah.
We have a lot of people from the Portland Metro that come in because they're looking to just get out of the city and do something different because they've kind of been to some of the places around Portland, right?
Yeah.
They don't want to deal with parking or whatever, and they just look to take a drive. And, and then we get people from the outlying areas, Estacada and all up and down, you know, the I-5 corridor, really.
Yeah.
So that's been a huge portion of our success.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Really just kind of infiltrating the local area and then reaching out a little bit
further. Obviously you're a restaurant and I love your guys' food, but even outside of that, I think you just nailed the ambiance. Like you were always going for that kind of farmhouse, homey feel, but with a little touch of elegance, you know?
Absolutely.
And I'm here with my kids today,
yeah.
And my daughter, my five-year-old, we're walking up, and they're like, this is a restaurant. And they've been here before, but I guess they didn't remember. They're like, this isn't a restaurant. This is a house, you know? Like
it looks like that, yeah.
And that just kind of summed it up to me, that, like, you come, you get good food, but you don't necessarily feel like you're not at being welcomed into a home. I mean,
I agree. It has that just from the outside. They did such a great job of
and
taking
it is built from a house. I don't know if listeners remember that.
Oh, right.
But
right.
But so I mean, they're not wrong saying it's a house, but
they did such a great job. The design elements of this place to take the design elements of the house, the original house, the Moeller house that's right there on the highway.
Yeah.
And bring that into the rest of the brand new construction. It looks so much like it. So you have that same feel of like, oh, there's a house and it just kind of extends into this giant place in the back. So you get that feeling.
Cool. Well, and I mean, you guys opened on December 26th. You'll always be a little bit linked to the holiday season because of that. But really, like, maybe it's because of that hominess, but I feel like that's really in your wheelhouse. I mean, is that true? Like, you guys really lean into the holiday season? It seems like you do a bit.
100%. So far, we're 15 days into December. And it has been unbelievable so far this month. So we're sitting in the Colony Ballroom today, not in the top of the farmhouse.
Too loud up there.
Yeah, right. And this room, I think this month, we've probably used 6 or 7 times already.
Yeah.
And
it just feels like one of those places that would be like a holiday tradition for people. I mean, that's kind of why we're here, actually.
Yeah. So the amount of companies that come in for Christmas party functions, families upstairs doing their get-togethers for during the holidays so far, the farmhouse we use for lots of families getting together and some businesses. It's been, December has been great, and November even with people getting together with family out of town, coming in for Thanksgiving. They want to share something with their family. Like, oh, you got to check this place out.
Yeah.
Leaning into the holidays, I would say, is a very accurate description for us right now.
Cool. Is there anything that you've, I'm sure there's many things that you've learned over the past year that really surprised you?
There's many things. You know, my personal limitations are one.
I do have to sleep occasionally.
I learned
that,
No, I think just really the quality of the people out here is, you know, I live in Canby. My wife and family and I, we've lived there for, 15 years now-ish. And, you know, I love it there, but just the people in our general vicinity. I've worked in some great restaurants and some wonderful places and great neighborhoods and had wonderful clients and guests. But to be honest, these people are just the best. And I was hoping for that, but really, that's really one of the best things that I've learned. It's just the guests here are fantastic. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Anything new for the coming year that you can tell us about?
Well, lots going on, really. We're looking at having our first full year of actually having information to look back on the previous year. So we'll be better prepared.
Right.
But the downstairs patio will be utilized a lot more in some different ways, hopefully to take advantage of those summer months. We did some outdoor patio grilling this year.
Yeah.
And that was successful, but I want to grow that and do something maybe a little bit different with that.
Yeah. You get a lot of focus on the building, but you've got some really nice grounds here as well.
So. Amazing. Yeah. We're looking at potentially doing our first couple of on-site weddings this summer.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. We talked about that in the first interview, and that seemed like it was, you know, super far off.
Oh, yeah. So our first interview was, I can't remember when it was, but I remember where it was.
Yeah.
It was up in the attic or something of the original house.
Top of the farmhouse,
and there was, like,
hammering
and sawing going on.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, no light. The light went out on us.
Right,
yeah.
That's right.
We were sitting in the dark, two guys.
Yeah, it was a little
top of the farmhouse.
Sketchy, so.
Yeah, we survived.
We did.
But,
and here we are.
Yeah. But between that and, you know, constantly evolving what we do and how we're doing it just to better serve our guests that come in, you know, we're just going to have more events. We're going to do more fun things, and like the patio, downstairs patio, excuse me, like the weddings, you know, there's just a lot kind of coming down the pipe for us, and really just embracing what we've learned about ourselves and what people want from us.
Cool.
You know.
Cool. Awesome. Well, I'm really happy for you guys. Congratulations.
Thank
on
you
the
very
one
much.
Year. Thanks for taking time out to talk to us.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. Thank you. It's good to see you every time. You're welcome.
Now, a story about one tight-knit Canby neighborhood's effort to support one of their own and bring a little light to their lives in a time of darkness. If you visit Northeast 12th Way, you'll see a display that's a little different than your typical fair this time of year. Brightly lit trees line the yard of each home on that cul-de-sac. They're not Christmas trees, but cherry blossom trees, a symbol of peace and hope. And they're in memory of Austin Peart, an athlete at Canby High and Linfield College who died in a single vehicle crash last February. He was only 24 and had recently returned to Canby after graduating college. The Peart family lives on 12th Way, and one of their neighbors, Manya Frazier, said she had the idea for the trees because she knows how difficult the holidays can be for those still grieving such tragic and unexpected loss. We talked with Manya recently, and she told us about the impact this simple act of kindness has had.
Well, I just, one of these dark, damp mornings, I thought, how can we help the Peart's with their loss of their son, Austin? And so I thought about, oh, with flowers, with cookies, with what would do it, nothing. And so then I just had this idea because I had to go around the neighborhood and update our neighborhood watch sheet with phone numbers and things. And so as I went around, I asked people if they would be willing. I had found some really neat trees that had 208 lights on them, and they're bare branch, and they're a spring flower on it. It's not a Christmas tree. And we would, if one in our yards, then light them in the evening, it would be light up the night for Austin Peart. And so we remembered Austin Peart. So I went around, and 100% of my neighbors, and there's 14 of us in this little cul-de-sac area, and we each bought a tree, and we put them up the first week of December. Well, Debbie came over later, the mother, Austin's mother, and said, oh my land, when we saw one go up and then a couple go up and then we saw all of them go up, we were wondering, what are the trees for? And at that moment, I handed her the package that had her tree in it, and I said, these are Austin trees to light up the dark during this holiday season. Well, she burst into tears, and I burst into tears. And the idea came because my own brother had been killed when I was a child in May. And at Christmas time, I noticed that as I looked out the window, my friends were riding their bikes and their folks were out, you know, laughing and enjoying it. And my dad sat silently, and my mom was crying in a chair.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, the idea came from that. Anyway, that's the story of the Austin trees.
Yeah, on our street. You're totally fine, Monty, and I thank you so much for your vulnerability and sharing, because it is such an important reminder that we so often forget there's so much fun stuff that happens on the holidays. There's so much stressfulness and busyness, and we can forget the people, just our neighbors, you know, just down the street, just next door to us, maybe our coworkers, who might be going through some really hard times. And these holidays, when they're seeing people enjoying themselves and whatnot, can bring that up in a really hard way. So thank you for reminding us about that.
Oh, you're very welcome. And I enjoyed that Debbie and Charlie were excited about their tree. They went right home and put it up and put it out in their front. Mm-hmm. So well, we all.
And I gather, because I remember this story of this incredibly tragic story about Austin back in early February. I think it was February 2nd. Uh-huh. That he was in a horrific single vehicle crash, died at the scene. He was only 24 years old.
He would have turned 25 on the 15th of December.
Oh gosh. Okay, so he was a holiday baby as well.
Yes.
Yeah. But he was, you know, really well known athlete. He went to Linfield College and had just recently returned to the area. And so, you know, I remember that back then when the story came out, just the outpouring of sympathy, you know, obviously the family going through a horrible tragedy, but his many friends and loved ones in the area also, you know, are probably remembering him. And, you know, with his birthday this month, I think that it's a great reminder and a great way to memorialize them for the whole community.
Yeah, it is. And he was especially such a happy boy. And he came and told me that his girlfriend had just passed her nursing board. And he was really excited about life at the time. Yeah. He had a good job at a winery. And
sounds like you knew him quite well.
Well, not, you know,
yeah,
we weren't best as a neighbor or anything. But yeah, as a neighbor.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember from the story when it was, I think, quite a few of his friends were saying, you know, just described him as always smiling and cheerful. Like, that was kind of the impression everyone got of him, is what, how you just described it as well.
Yeah, he was. He just was Mr. Happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I do love the idea with the trees. As you mentioned, it's not a Christmas tree. It's kind of even perhaps an even more sort of hopeful sign with the spring aspect and, you know, a little bit of a different take on the holiday season. Not so different that you would, you know, that it stands out, but if you know the story behind it, it makes it very meaningful. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, and if people walk down our little cul-de-sac and walk at all the trees, it's just kind of peaceful. Hmm. We didn't decorate a lot this year. Usually we've got them all over the rim. Some of them had their lights up, but it's just the solemn white trees.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. So, and that street, I don't know if we mentioned it, but that's 12th Way in Canby.
12th Way. Yeah,
that little cul-de-sac there. So, Monty, again, thanks so much for your vulnerability. Thank you for doing this for this, you know, really beloved Canby family in our town. And thanks for telling us about it.
Okay, and thank you for bringing it to light for people. Yeah.
True story. When we first started the Canby Now podcast, we were looking to buy some stickers, just something to help us get our name out there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we tried to do everything as cheaply as possible online. We wound up with 1,000 of these teeny tiny cheap looking stickers. Not exactly the impressive swag we were hoping for, but you know, you get what you pay for.
Yes, you do. If we had been smart, we would have gone to see Carrie at Promotional Strategies. She's a real live human and a creative genius who will deliver practical, strategic ways to promote your business on any budget. If you're looking for high quality swag that you can be proud to see your logo on, Promotional Strategies is where you want to go. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com.
The great outdoors. Sometimes you just gotta get away to a place where life is simpler. The air is clean and the nearest ringing phone is about a million miles away. One of the best places that we found is My Cowboy Cabin near Joseph, Oregon, in the heart
of the Eagle Cap Wilderness.
Eagle Cap is the largest unspoiled wilderness area in Oregon, with breathtaking views of granite mountains and crystal clear lakes, and more than 500 miles of trails to explore. It's one of the premier hiking, fishing, and hunting destinations in the Pacific Northwest. My Cowboy Cabin is open from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend, and can be reserved on a weekly or monthly basis, depending on availability. With a cabin that sleeps up to 8 people,
and also a teepee that sleeps 8 or more.
That's right. It's perfect for family vacations, retreats, reunions, and more. Find out more at mycowboycabin.com.
The Camby Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
The Camby Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
Huge thank you as well to our supporters on Patreon. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue to do this work that we seriously love. For information on how you can become one of the coolest people in the world, a patron of the Camby Now podcast, visit cambynowpod.com/plus.